Live from the Great American Beer Festival and sponsored by Yard House Restaurants, this is the GABF Beer and Food Pavilion. Give it up, everybody. My name is Andy Sparhawk. I'm with the Brewers Association. On behalf of the BA, I'd like to welcome you to this little slice of heaven crammed inside beer paradise. Before we get started, some notes of service. Obviously, this is the Beer and Food Pavilion. You will be tasting beer and food. Make sure to follow along with your presenters. If you eat everything, you won't be able to try the awesome pairings that they have planned for you. So try to keep up and coordinated. Also, want to let you know that craftbeer.com will have these recorded and available to download for you next week. So if you have any revelations or notes that you want to go back to because this was such a great seminar, please visit us at craftbeer.com. Also, as the last seminar of the night, I want to give a toast to my man Steve over here doing AV. Everybody give a round of applause for Steve. Thanks, Steve. This seminar is called Beer and Spice and Chocolate So Nice. It is my pleasure to welcome from Bella Online, the Beer Fox, Carolyn Smigowski, and her friends from Free Will Brewing Company, Pennsylvania.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Carolyn Smigowski, the editor of Beer and Brewing at Bella Online, the voice of women on the internet. And I am pleased to have with me John Stemler from Free Will Brewing Company, brewmaster of Free Will Brewing Company in Pennsylvania, and David Wood, the brewer that stands by his side. Now, I just wanted to have a little bit of fun with you guys first. Try to hold on and, you know, you could start drinking the beer because there's a lot of beer.
Hey,
they could
going?
Fill that. But good. I just wanted to have a little fun with you and talk about how there are women, I'm a beer writer, and there are a few women in the beer industry. And because there are women in the beer industry, we are far and few between. As a result, I get mistaken for a lot of different people. One of those is Annette Barron. She is the director of Beer Wars movie. And it's kind of neat to be mistaken for her from time to time. As you can see, we kind of wear our hair short, both have glasses. And there are people who walk up to me and they say, Annette, hey, I really love your stuff. And I say, why, thank you. What else can you say? But her movie is great. She has a very notable quote from that movie. And that is, almost all our beer knowledge comes from Budweiser, Miller, and Coors. It's as if we all knew about the food that we learned was from McDonald's. That was said by Jim Cook. And we are trying to turn that around, educate everybody about beer and food and what craft beer is. How many people out there love craft beer? Woo! I think we have a few fans. Another person I get mistaken for is Lucy Saunders because I write at a woman's website. Lucy's awesome. She has 3 books about food and beer, The Best of American Beer and Food, Cooking with Beer, Grilling with Beer. She also is one of the essayists in the book Beer Hunter Whiskey Writer. This was a book that was put together. There are 12 international beer writers, or 6 beer writers, 6 whiskey writers in this book, and they wrote articles or essays that they thought Michael Jackson would enjoy. They didn't want to have something that was sad and moany and all that kind of thing, but instead they wrote something that they thought he would like. The other person is Marnie Old. Now, she doesn't look at all like me, does she? Or do you think? I see some people laughing out there. Marnie Old is an author and a sommelier. She's out of Philadelphia. I'm out of Philadelphia area as well. Marnie wrote, he said beer, she said wine, with Sam Calagione. Anybody have that book or read that book? Yeah, awesome, isn't it? Go look for it. She also did Wine Simplified. It is a tablet book that she received an award on, and she does the Cheap Buzz column at the Philadelphia Daily News. But that's not me either. I'm an independent journalist. I write at Bella Online, the voice of women on the internet. I write at beerlovers.com about culture, society, and health. And then I do a lot of magazine writing also. I'm the woman on the scene of Philly Beer Scene magazine. And I write for Zymergy, and I've written for Beer Advocate. You get the idea. I'm also the founder of the Philly Beer Geek Competition. And we have a person here tonight who actually ran for Philly Beer Geek, our David Wood. This was before he became a brewer. We have a competition in Philadelphia during Philly Beer Week. And we, this year, gave away almost $10,000 in prizes to the winner. They got $1,500 worth of gift certificates. How's that? Now, here's our Free Will founders, Dominic Capice, who is manning the booth over there, and John Stemler, our esteemed brewmaster. And here we've got John and David Wood. And at this point, I'm going to hand it over to John and David so that they can talk a little bit about Free Will.
Hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you. Thanks
for coming. Hi, my name is John Stemler. I am the brewmaster and founder of Free Will Brewing Company. We got licensed in January of 2012, so we're a very young company. We're located in southeastern Pennsylvania. We distribute about 26 counties in Pennsylvania. We're going to be launching New Jersey in November. We have a full portfolio. We bottle. We do 12-ounce long necks, draft, specialty releases, things like that. One thing I'm excited about tonight. You guys hear me? One thing I'm excited about tonight is that we have a beer that is not at the festival for you guys. It's our Hop Geek. It is an Imperial IPA.
I'm sorry.
So I'm glad to have that because I haven't had it in a while. The rest of the beers you can find at our table. We have our Destiny's Wit. It's a Belgian-style white ale. We have our Pale Stout. It's an amber stout, a really unique style. And we have our Rapunzel Ale, which is actually a really hoppy rye saison, somewhat of a very challenging beer.
Okay, now what we're going to do, before I move on with all of this, I'm going to explain. We're going to go from left to right on this. We have the first pairing is the orange oatmeal wit cookies. They're made with Destiny's Wit.
We might want to...
So make sure you have that cookie on the left-hand side.
Right.
No, left. Okay. Now, we're going to pair that cookie. So you've got the cookie, and you've got the Destiny's Wit. That's your first beer. Now, one thing that you want to do when you're talking about beer and food pairings, keep in mind that you can either contrast, complement, or cut. So with something like this, this is a very light-flavored cookie, and so we've decided to pair it with this very light-flavored beer. It has orange in it. The Destiny's Wit has hints of orange flavor. If you smell that, take it, give it a swirl, give it a good smell. You're going to smell a lot of spices in that, right? Now, one thing to keep in mind also when you're talking about pairing beer, pairing food together, that there are different palates. Every single one of us has different palates. I'm a beer judge, and I know that. And that's why we have so many beer judges, because every person at that table has a different palate. Sometimes there's somebody who absolutely loves a flavor, and someone else doesn't like it at all. And that's because we're all different. We all come from different perspectives. And so, you know, it takes a lot to really find something that you like. If you like these pairings, that's great. We think they're wonderful marriages between the flavors in the beer and the flavors in the food. If you don't like them, that's okay. And you may, I'd like you to just taste them all and see what you think. And keep in mind all the different flavors that you're tasting. If you want more beer, signal to them and let them know so they can come around and pour you more beer. Why don't you talk a little bit about Destiny's Wit? I'll hand it to David right now so he could talk about Destiny's Wit and tell us a little bit about that beer.
How you doing, folks? My name's Dave Wood. Brewer from Free Will Brewing Company. I've actually been with the company for almost a year now. Wasn't really much of a wit fan when I started with the company. It was kind of a, something I would just usually go and pass on for most of the time. But yeah, came across this, has a lot of good vanilla notes, a little bit of spice, a lot of vanilla, a little bit of banana flavors, and it's all has a nice smooth texture due to the amount of raw oats that we actually do use in the mash. Pairs really well with spicier foods. It's awesome summer beer, and it goes really well with a cookie, at least in my opinion. So.
Now, one thing that you'll notice when you're tasting beer and when you're tasting foods is that every style of beer has flavors that seem to come out of them. One of those flavors with wit beer, for instance, are that there are very citrusy fruits. You will taste the orange peel. Sometimes with some wit beers, you might taste little hints of lemon. They're not as traditional as the ones with just orange. And then you're going to have coriander in there. It's also, there is a trend among American brewers to make wit beers with other spices as well. They're not traditional wit beers, but they're still very, very delicious wit beers. So don't diss them or anything because they're a little bit different. Do you like that pairing? Okay, that's great. Oh, and by the way, if you want to make those orange oatmeal cookies, I'm going to put the recipes on Bella Online. I was going to actually do it today, but I kind of got sidetracked with maybe tasting a bit of beer. So they've got butter in them, some packed brown sugar, some white sugar, eggs, and then all this good stuff. Vanilla extract, orange zest that is freshly grated from the oranges. They've got ground cinnamon, nutmeg, rolled oats, and cranberries. So they're really pretty healthy. Some people like to cut back a little on the butter and the sugars in there, and they still turn out really well. I put some wit beer in these as well. So if you go online, Abella Online, you're going to find that. Oh, there's nothing better than cooking with beer. Am I right? Does anybody here cook with beer? Wow, that's fantastic. You know, when I started Abella Online, I started writing about cooking with beer because there were so few people who really did some cooking with beer. Of course, Michael Jackson, the beer hunter, he cooked with beer. Does anybody know who that is? Beer hunter? Michael Jackson, the beer hunter, was a British beer writer, and he was writing for beer for 30 years. After he passed away in 2007, the Royal Society of Brewing History had a special edition that they put out, and it was completely about Michael Jackson. There were 10 writers throughout the world who were chosen to write in this book. And I've written the section about Michael Jackson, the father of the craft brewing renaissance in America. So look for that. Had it not been for Michael Jackson, we might not have had quite as robust a scene here. When he and Charlie Papazian had actually gone to the Great British Beer Festival, and after this festival, Charlie said to Michael, "Do you think we could do this in America?" And at that time, there were about 44 brewing companies in the United States. And Michael said, "Well, we could and we should, but what would we do for beer?" And now that has really changed. There are over 2,500 brewing companies in the United States. In my region alone, in the Philadelphia region alone, there are 20 new brewing companies that are scheduled to open up between now and the spring. So that, and you'll find that in probably every area you're from, that the brewing companies are opening up like crazy. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing, because people are discovering beer and they're realizing that beer is food. It's good for you. So many times, because of Prohibition, we were taught, oh, you don't want that beer stuff. No. That's not good for you. But it is extraordinarily good for you. It's loaded with vitamins and with flavonoids and all these things that make your bones strong and make you healthy. Just always tempered a little bit. Our next pairing is going to be the Rapunzel Saison. And you're going to put that with this little rice chocolate candy here. This is called a Milk Bordeaux, and that is a creamy brown sugar covered in milk chocolate. And we're going to have John Stemmler talk to us about Rapunzel.
Rapunzel Ale. It is a really hoppy rye saison. It was somewhat of a challenging recipe for us, such that my partner didn't even want me to brew it on a large system. He allowed me to do 5 gallons of it because he was a little scared of it. He didn't think anybody would like it. So I made the 5 gallons, and he was still somewhat scared of it. We put it to our tasting room and let some people actually try it, and there was overwhelming response that was a yes. So we went ahead and brewed 15 barrels of it. It got some steam behind it. And we won a third place award for the best new beer on Philadelphia market this year with it. So it's now here to stay. So it will be around all summer long. It actually takes place of our Hop Geek during the summer as our specialty hoppy offering. We named it Rapunzel because when I was brewing it and describing it, I was calling it a hoppy rye saison. I called it a rye piezon. So my partner looked at me and said, "It sounds like Rapunzel." And I said, "That sounds like a good beer name." So that's where it came from. It's actually quite a simple beer. It does have a relatively high percentage of rye in it, which if anybody knows brewing, rye is a bit messy in the mash. It's hard to get all the sugars out of the rye because it gets kind of slimy. So it actually becomes a problem in the brewing process. So we did use a relatively high level, and we did make it work. We do lose some efficiency with it, but it does come out well in the beer. And it gives that really dry, spicy character to it, which is complemented by the Saison yeast as well. And then we ferment the beer a little bit warm, which gives that even more yeast-driven spices. The hops we use are very piney and grapefruity. We only use 3 different varieties. We use Apollo, Chinook, and Calypso. And then we dry hop it very, very heavily with Apollo and Chinook. Over 1 pound per barrel we dry hop it with for 7 days. The resulting beer is a very, very lovely but challenging beer for some people. If you're not into hops or anything a little challenging, it's probably not going to work for you. Yeah. But I like it a lot, and it's one of my favorite beers that we make.
Now, I know you might be looking for the names of the beers on the screen, but they're not there because we're having all the attention coming to our brewmasters. But right now, we're going to take a little intermission here and talk about Free Will Brewing and their philanthropy. And the reason that I want to talk about this is because these great guys have gotten together with four women, well, three beer writers and one woman bar owner in Philadelphia to create a beer called Saison de Rose. It is a Saison beer, traditional Belgian-style Saison, and it's brewed with ruby red grapefruit, ginger, hibiscus, and pink and black peppercorns. And the reason that we did this is for Breast Cancer Awareness Month of October. We intended to raise $10,000 with this beer for the Rena Rowan Breast Center at Penn Medicine. And so far, we're at $25,000. And there is the team for Free Will Brewing. There's David Wood, I guess you recognize him. And John Stemler's there, and I'm there. Marnie Old, who you've seen earlier in an earlier slide. Aaron Wallace, who owns three beer bars in Philadelphia. Taryn Noren, who is a beer writer in southern New Jersey. And Dominic Capice, who is the president of Free Will Brewing. And we also have Matthew Stumpf, who has made a video, a documercial about Saison de Rose, and Punch Media, who have helped us with these funds. And there's our beer and the tap handle. What do you think? It's good? I wish I would have been able to bring it here tonight, but because the government is shut down, we're kind of shut down too with the labels and the bottling. So that'll come probably in November. Yeah, boo, huh? Now, I just want to talk a little bit also about the chocolate process.
He's got an old-timey...
Most people think of chocolate and they go, ooh, it's like heavenly, isn't it? But how many people really think about the process of it? Chocolate comes as a cacao bean, and it's found all over the world. It's found that these are the eight biggest markets for chocolate: Mexico, the Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, Cameroon, Brazil, Malaysia, and Indonesia. And because these pods grow year-round in most subtropical areas, they have to be hand-picked so that there's no damage to these pods. They're then taken and fermented. They're scooped up. The pod is opened, and there's a white fibrous material in there in amongst the seeds. That's scooped out. And it's fermented. It's wrapped in palm leaves. And it ferments.
Good.
And then it's taken out. All that alcoholic juice is drained out of there. And then it is dried, and it is raked. Oftentimes in the sun, the cocoa butter is separated from the bean itself and dried. And then there is a process called conching, where it is rolled in this machine that looks very much like a conch. And as it's rolled and rolled and rolled, it makes it smoother and smoother. It was actually an accident that was... it was discovered how to do this. Because before this, chocolate was only really used for drinks. The Aztecs drank chocolate drinks. And candy was really not something that they really used too much. But you could see what our results are. Our third pairing here is with the orange cream. That's the flattened chocolate. And that is paired with a pale stout. And John Stemler would like to talk about that, or David, which one?
Well, folks, the beer up, pale stout. It's a 5.3% dry stout. Not brewed to any real style. We actually call it an amber stout. What we actually do here is we actually used Breese roasted barley, which tends to be a little bit lower SRM. Doesn't really actually give that much too dark of a color. We also use a pale roasted chocolate as well, or pale roasted chocolate malt. So it doesn't really contribute so much to the color, but it still gives us plenty of that roasted character that you would expect in a stout.
And where did that name come from for the pale stout?
All right, the whole story. I was given a bottle of a beer from London from Meantime Brewery. It's called London Stout. You can get it only in New Jersey, apparently. But this particular bottle did, in fact, come over the ocean from a friend's sister who bought it in a bottle shop in London. The price label that was on the bottle itself said Pale Stout, which I thought was really intriguing. The beer itself was very good, but was in fact black and opaque like you would expect. But the term Pale Stout kind of stuck in my head. So I set out to try and create something that tasted like a stout, but was more amber to brown in color. So luckily, there is a roasted barley in the United States that is in fact half the darkening contribution to beer than any other roasted barley that I've ever found. And it actually is somewhat of a roasted barley show, that beer. There's some flavors that come out in that beer that you don't really get in the stouts because they're usually overshadowed by some of the other darkening grains, like the darker chocolate or the black patent malt that you'll find in almost all stout recipes. There's also a very, very slight touch of smoke that some people get out of it. I've picked it up a lot more as I've continued to make it. Not everybody gets it, but it is all from the roasted barley.
What do you think of that pairing? Yeah, it's got that orange creaminess inside that chocolate. You can even see little flecks of orange in there. And I don't know about you, but when I'm tasting these, it seems to also enhance the flavors in the stout. They really do work together. These are working. You could taste a little bit of, I don't know how you like this, but I'm tasting some chocolate, coffee, creaminess, a little bit of tobacco, a little bit of what else?
I'm getting a little bit of leather.
Little leather? Do you get a little leather in that too? Yeah, it's really a good pairing. We were really lucky because we have gotten together with See's Candies. Now, See's Candies started in 1921, and it was started by Charles Alexander See, who was the founder. And Charles See started this. He came down from Canada. He moved to L.A. That was a switch because he was used to cold weather, came down to warm weather, came down for very open-minded people, and he said, hey, you know what? My mother has this great recipe for candy. Why don't I open a candy store? So he took his mother, Mary C.'s recipes, and he opened a very small candy shop in L.A., there's the first candy shop there, See's Candies. Since then, they've opened up hundreds of shops. They've moved their headquarters to San Francisco. And somewhere around, and I think it was the 40s, Warren Buffett said, hey, you know what? This is the perfect model of a business. And so he bought See's Candies and put it under his umbrella for Berkshire Hathaway. Warren Buffett was a person who always bought bargain companies, and this was the very first company he bought that thought he thought it was an absolute perfect company. Every one of their little stores were totally white, all white tile. And how many people have seen that episode? I Love Lucy. Do you ever see that one where they've got all the conveyor belts going down and they're she and Ethel Merman are both stuffing the candies into their mouth? That was modeled after See's Candies. That's where they got that idea. And I can't help looking at that without laughing. And you could see, this is the typical See's candy shop in the 1940s, all white tile, and the floors were a black and white checkerboard. And even today, the stores are a little black and white checkerboard. There's today's shop. So they have come a very long way. Most of their companies are west of the Mississippi River. They're just starting to open up a few shops on the east, but they are highly, highly selective about what kind of shops they open and where. They're not going to just put them anywhere, and they're not going to put them in the hands of just anybody. And one of the interesting things about See's is that they hold the Guinness World Record for the world's largest lollipop. You can kind of get a little bit of perspective of how big that lollipop is. I'm not sure who ate that, but it's there. Our last pairing here is the Hop Geek that will be coming around. And that is going to go with the Beverly. That's that one that's a little rounded mound. And this is buttercream. It's very, very creamy. And it has a little bit of vanilla. It's got almonds and walnuts in it, too. So if anybody has any kind of allergy to nuts or anything of that sort, it does have some nuts in it. The reason that we paired this with Hop Geek is that the buttercream, all that buttery, silky chocolate in that goes very, very well with an IPA that can really cut that fat. You guys want to talk about this?
I could get more if need be.
Hop Geek, I hate this beer. I hate to make it because there's so much hops in it that we lose so much beer in the process. It's a very stressful day. Our mash tun is not quite big enough to do our full size, so we actually brew more smaller size batches to fill each fermenter. So it's a lot more work for us to brew. It really wasn't designed to be a production beer. It was designed for fun. It's called Hop Geek because at the time that we designed it, we had no IPA whatsoever. We had our pale ale only, and we had a pale ale only, and people wanted more hops. So finally, my partner Dominic let me loose on an Imperial IPA. We skipped right over IPA and went right to the Imperial. This original recipe had 10 different kinds of hops in it. It has been modified slightly down to 8 varieties of hops, but it's absurd how much goes into this beer, and that's why it's called Hop Geek. When I originally submitted the name to the federal government, I was actually kind of shocked that somebody hadn't taken the name Hop Geek. But we make this probably from about September through April, and then we turn it off in the summertime because a 9% Imperial IPA might be a little much when it's 95 degrees out, at least for me anyway. But me, personally, I get a lot of herbal and like tea hop notes out of it, as well as pine and orange rind, things like that, as well as a very supportive malt backbone. There's even some honey notes in the malt, which comes from a malt that is called honey malt. Most people don't realize that most honey notes in beer aren't from honey itself. It's more from honey malt.
When I first started with the brewery, this was actually probably my favorite of the beers that we were running. And then after the first brew day that we actually did Hop Geek, it really quickly became my least favorite beer. It's a pain in the ass. We put way too many hops in there. our heat exchange at the time was barely a step up from a Blickman Therminator. It liked to clog up a lot when we were doing coolings. On top of all that, when we go and we move it into our fermenters, we probably go and rack about 15 barrels into the fermenter. And at the time, we were only getting maybe about 13 barrels out. So, a lot of the beer went the way of the hops and right down the drain. But it's one of my favorite beers as far as the drink. It's definitely one of my least favorite beers to make.
John, do you want to tell them what you just told me?
As another tasting note, this beer goes really well with stinky cheese, like blue cheese, things like that. Some aggressive cheeses this does really well with.
Now, one thing that you want to remember is that you want to pair different beers with different kinds of food. Now, if you don't really know beer styles so well, how many people feel really comfortable with a lot of beer styles? There's a fair amount of hands, but I see that there are a lot of people who aren't quite so sure. So if you're not so sure, my recommendation is that you start trying and tasting everything you can come across, all different styles. You'll take a look at it. The way that I got into writing about beer and brewing in the first place was because I had a normal job, and I wasn't even a beer drinker. I was a wine drinker because I was a chick. Girls drink wine. How silly is that? Anyway, I was sitting around thinking, well, what can I do? And I knew that I could cook because I've been cooking for my family for years. And I decided it'd be a good idea to put beer in the recipes because the people that I worked with really liked beer. So I thought there must be something to it. So I walked into the beer distributor. I live in Pennsylvania. And guess what? Pennsylvania is a case state. At that time, you could only buy cases of beer. And I said, I just want to buy two bottles of this and two bottles of that. And they said, you can't do that. You have to buy a case. And I said, my God, that's ridiculous. And that was absolutely ridiculous. So I wrote to beer companies and breweries all over the US and Canada, and I asked them to send me two bottles of beer, and they did. A lot of them did. I probably had 100 brewing companies that sent me two bottles of beer so I could test these recipes. It was incredible, and it was the greatest education I could have had. And every weekend, I cooked with this beer, and I would make food for my family, for my mother and her older friends, my kids and their younger friends. So I had a really big cross-section of people who would taste all these combinations. And I learned a lot. And at one point, I held up Orval, and I said, wow, what is that? It was iridescent, it was chestnutty and sort of rose-colored, and it was really, really beautiful eye candy. And I started tasting these beers. Instead of just putting the beers in the recipes, I would put the beer in the recipes and drink the rest. What was wrong with that, right? Nothing wrong with that, right?
Cheers, man.
Well, I learned an awfully lot about beer. And when you do that, that's when you start really understanding what beers go with what food. You'll try maybe a stout and put it in with a salad dressing. Sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. Usually the lighter beers would work really well with that, but with something like a darker raspberry vinaigrette or something like that, it might work really nicely. So don't be afraid to try different things, all different kinds of foods that you're gonna try with that. Does everybody have enough beer? They stop taking beer around? Wow. Does anybody have any questions? Okay.
I got a question right
Questions?
Here.
If you're going to describe the different types of food that would go with different types of beer, how would you go about that?
He wants to know what kind of different beers go with different kinds of foods. What you want to look at is that you can cut, you can contrast, or you can complement foods. Foods that have high fat content, you're going to look for beers that will cut that fat content. You can do it that way, just like we did with the buttercream and the Hop Geek. It worked really well together. You're going to like something with the stouts, for instance. A stout can go with something like oranges, but it can also go very, very nicely with darker meats, gravies, all those kinds of richer feel to the food. And so that would work very, very well together. If you have wit beer, you're going to want to pair it with something nice and light, a lot of light fruits, citrusy stuff, maybe anything that is spicy would go very well with a wit beer. If you have a Frauch beer, something with heather in it, you're going to want something that is maybe a nice salad to go with that. Be really creative when you think about pairing things. Something like a brown ale, for instance, it's got a lot of flavors of nuts in it. It's got a lot of flavors of brown bread. So think about when you taste these beers, think about what flavors you can pick out in that beer and then try to either match it or contrast it. Anybody else have questions? Which pairings did you like the most? Number three, number one, number two, number four, number three. See, all different palettes. That's fantastic. I want to thank you. I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank Andy Sparhawk, the Brewers Association, sure. John Stemler, David Wood, and Free Will Brewing for being so gracious and being our host here. And go out there and have some great beer. Thank you.
Give it up for Carolyn and everybody. Thank you so much.